He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, Lakers Insider for Lakers Daily, joined on this fine, what is it, Pete? Tuesday? It's Tuesday, right? Mm-hmm. Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday late morning, your time. It's Pete. It's our buddy Pete, Laker film with Pete. Pete Zayas is in the house. It's been way too damn long. How you doing, buddy? Thank you very much for hopping on.
I'm good, man. It's good to be back on. It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. It's been a weird minute, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's been a weird time in the amount of time since you and I have been talking or last potted, I guess. We don't need to get into why it's been weird, but we can just say that it's been weird and we can move on and we can talk about the Lakers offseason. But yeah, let's start though with this Lakers offseason, which I think it's the rare time where calling something polarizing is actually the correct way to put it, because a lot of times people will use polarizing instead of controversial, or a lot of times people will use polarizing instead of saying, like, a lot of people hate it.
Yeah.
And I think the reason I would call this polarizing is because, like, a lot of people have hated. I also have hated this Lakers offseason. I haven't thought it's been very good. But the reason I think it's actually polarizing is because of the reasoning behind it. Mm-hmm. That, like, it's explicable to a certain extent. I'm not going to, you know, post bail for the Lakers or anything like that. But I do think that there are some logical steps along the way that would lead us to arrive here at this place where the roster next season going into next year is essentially the same as it was last year, minus Torian Prince and Spencer Dinwiddie. Mm-hmm. Let's just start super macro. And I'm going to ask you, how have you felt about this Lakers offseason?
I've been in a similar boat of, like, I hate it, but I understand it. And I think that there's a certain amount of, like, we got to make a move. We've got these two guys who are still very good. We're watching them play great in the Olympics.
It hasn't helped that we've been watching them play on Team USA.
But it adds to that certain amount of, you know, this isn't a good enough team to compete for a championship, right?
Yeah.
So why aren't you making a move? And I think the answer to that is that it's a timing thing, that now is not the right time to make a move. The right time is at the deadline. Now, will they make a move at the deadline? I don't know if that's certain or not. I just think that's the point at which it's like, okay, that's when you've let the ship kind of sail. We had the Lauri Markkanen news break today where it's kind of indicative of what the marketplace is like in the summer for trades in a lot of ways, where it's like, it's going to cost you a little bit more if you really want a guy. You can get him, but you're going to really have to dole out. And Anthony, we got $10 in our pocket, and we've got to be wise about where we spend it. And so with those two firsts, especially what you are, if you're going to deal the first, by all means, I'm all for doing that. But what you are on the other side of that trade, are you a championship team? Because if those are the two main bullets you have to fire. We've got solid players on good contracts in their 20s, and that has a certain amount of value too. But in terms of getting, like, the big dogs, the picks are the things that we have to trade. And so I think just being wise about where we spend that. And so I have disliked our offseason. I think that we are paying the price for the player options that we gave to some vet min guys. And I hate that the back end of the roster, there's like four guys that I really don't want in an NBA game at all. And so I'm worried about our ability to get through 82 because of that. But I understand why we are where we are.
Yeah, the player option thing, it really kind of feels like the Lakers were kind of like really surprised by the player option market. And I think like one of the things that, especially in Vegas is really kind of interesting because like what I'll essentially do, and I think I've said this on the show before, but you've been to Summer League, right, Pete? Like, you've gone to the games there at Summer League. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, right outside one of the sections, I think it's like 205 and 206, there's a bar that is, like, it's right outside, and it's where a lot of, like, writers and league personnel kind of coalesce. Like, we all just kind of, we all wind up there eventually at some point during the day that we're there at the arena. So what I started doing is I just buy a whole bunch of water, and I put a couple limes in it, some ice or whatever. And I just wind up sitting there all day. And I talk to agents, and I talk to executives, and I talk to whoever is interested in talking. And the conversations that I had with agents especially was particularly interesting as it pertains to this new CBA, in that so many of their clients, they had to advise them to be so much more conservative this year than in years past. If you could, you know, walk and breathe and chew gum at the same time, you opted out of player options. Like, that's just how it went before. And we saw it this year where Gary Trent Jr. opts out of his contract, and he is now a minimum guy.
Yeah.
His market just completely falls out from underneath him. And I don't know if it's a matter of it was like poor advice or poor instincts on his part. The tough part about being an agent sometimes is that, like, you can give advice, but that client doesn't always have to listen. So I don't know what happens there, but to watch a guy go from expecting a $25 million kind of offer from Toronto to now a veteran minimum contract in Milwaukee, I just think the CBA really threw the entire league for a loop. And in the way that it really smacked the Lakers upside the head was with this veteran minimum clause that, you can't stack veteran minimum contracts until December. And I think had the Lakers maybe taken that into greater account, they wouldn't have offered those player options the previous year. And that's actually why I think, you know, you mentioned earlier that the best time for the Lakers to really look to improve their rosters at the deadline, I actually think it's the second you can stack those contracts.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. That's what I mean, is the December to February window right there. Yeah.
Like the second that you can, you know, once again combine Jaxson Hayes and Cam Reddish and Christian Wood, and wouldn't you know it, those deals add up to what Jonas is making this year. Just interesting subplot. I also don't understand the rule. There's so much to this new CBA that's just like complicated for the sake of being complicated. I hate that veteran minimum thing. But yeah, I'm kind of with you on understanding how they arrive here. The one thing that I would say is, like, the reason I think teams see the Lakers as kind of desperate is because the Lakers only seem focused on those big swings, right? They only seem focused on, they're the modern baseball team that if you weren't hitting homers, you weren't doing anything. And I think the Lakers need to get back to getting guys on base. You know, get me a contact hitter. Get me somebody who can get on first to kick off an inning, or, you know, legs out a single, an infield single, or takes a walk or something like that. Like, the Lakers are seen as more desperate because they haven't done enough on the margins. And that's where I think that's the fairest kind of criticism that I would have of them.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I'd also say that the starfuckery ways of the Lakers, it's been a couple of years since they've actually made a trade. They're always rumored in those sorts of trades. Like, I personally don't think the Jeremy Grant thing exists in the real world at all. I don't think it's a thing at all. I think it's August content that is just gives people something to talk about. In the actual, like, Lakers are legitimately interested in this, I don't think it's a thing. We may disagree on that. We could talk offline about it too, but I don't. And so I would argue that trading Russ for three guys who have started is sort of a getting guys on base. There's a double in there. It might be a single in there too, right? And Vando and D'Lo, right? And so I think it's been a couple of years since the Lakers have actually done that. And they've been trying to sort of get back. And they're the sort of like, hey, what if we develop Max Christie and don't get rid of him after 2 years, right? As he's supposed to develop into the guy he's supposed to be. I think that's also the emphasis on player development, right? So there is some, I think, perception can be a lagging indicator a lot of times, right? And that's always going to be a fair criticism to some degree of the Lakers, the pursuit of stars, the big swings and all of that. But I think substantively, they've been trying to get better on the margins in that middle class. And I would argue that since the Russ trade, when we had Russ on the roster, we had almost no middle class on the roster in terms of players. And now that's fairly robust on this team. Does that win you a championship? No. I do think the Lakers need to make either two solid guys or one really, really good guy to be in that conversation. But I do think that there has been a concerted effort to kind of build out the middle class of the team in ways that perception can lag behind.
Yeah, I would argue that like if we're going back in time to like a couple of years ago or a year or so ago where those efforts began, and you know, like to not, so essentially like one example here is I think we would agree that the thing that the Lakers are most consistently good at, like legitimately good in comparison to their competition, is with their scouting team and with their draft team.
I think it's a little over. I think it's a lot overstated. Like we haven't done much this. We got Austin this decade. Now the Anthony Davis trade obviously is a big part.
It's kind of tough
of that, right? But like who's Max the last?
Fine, and
well, who's the last G League guy too that we've brought up as well? Right? Like I'd argue part of the reason the back end of the roster is crap is because that part hasn't been as good the last couple of years.
Yeah. But, well, I think part of that too is like the coaching aspect of it, because like I have thought that Castleton has some juice, and we just like haven't seen it. Like we just haven't seen him get an opportunity, and like Darvin just wasn't interested in like even Max. Like the it was insane that like you had Max sitting there after like a strong summer. Like I thought he played really well in Vegas, and then whenever I saw him I thought he had a pretty good rookie season, and then anytime I saw him on the court with the main team last year, I was like, this guy's got stuff. Like, can we get more of this guy? So I think part of it is coaching and development there too. And then some of it is opportunity. And that's more what I'm talking about here is that like, all right, this in this last draft, they didn't take a scouting team guy. Dalton Connect found money. And I'm not criticizing them for taking him. He was absolutely the right pick there because nobody thought he was going to fall that far. And then if you knew that you were going to be taking Bronny in the second round, which by all indications, that was pre-planned too, it essentially means that scouting team didn't get an opportunity to take their guy in the entirety of a draft. And, you know, given the state of the back half of the roster and if given their own words about like developing and youth and all of these things, that's a focus now. To not give that team that kind of an opportunity feels like, you know, a strikeout where you started the count 3-0, you know?
I mean, I think that is just framing it a certain way. I think Connect was very much their guy, right? But they just never expected him to be the guy that was available. But I think there was near consensus. They had the opportunity the year before. Both JHS and Lewis were their guys. And that was not, you know, like that's rough fair. Draft. That's looking like a rough draft. And so to me, like had they thought Connect, like part of the reason they were excited was because I don't think everybody in the room, but nearly everybody in the room was like, hell yeah, Dalton Connect fell to us. So I get your point there, but it's not like a strikeout from he was their guy at that spot.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean more that like, so I was told that they were looking center going into the draft. That like they had a series of center where there was like Yves Misi was somebody that I heard that they liked. Deron Holmes was somebody that I heard that they liked. Although I heard after the fact that like he was really guided to Denver, like he was like, you know. But like I think that they had seen as a need on this roster a center type of player, and I think that they were hoping to be able to get like a Derek Lively situation where they got a rookie on a contract who they were able to slot into an extremely narrow role, and you would get somebody who would impact the team next year. And then again, like you're 100% right to say that it was the right decision to take a left turn when holy shit, there's Dalton Connect. 100% the right pick. My thing is, okay, now like refocus on that draft, buy a second rounder, and you had Adem Bona early in the second round, who, you know, normally the Lakers, they've always bought a second rounder, and then they just like they sat out the second round, and then they took Bronny in it with like the 55th pick or whatever it was. And like, though, that's a spot where, again, we don't, I don't think that we'll ever know enough about like what options they had. And one thing that I have definitely heard a lot of is that those like 30, whatever it is, 31 to 40, those picks are now seen as like gold in the NBA. So it used to be the kind of pick that the Lakers would always buy. That's how they got Max Christie. And then now they might just be off of the market, which obviously really complicates things. And I think, again, that brings us, it oddly, full circle into, I'm frustrated that they didn't do it, but I also understand why they may not have been able to do it, right? You know, with like anything on this offseason. The Grant thing is interesting because, like, I know Clutch wants Grant on the Lakers. I know Grant has interest in being on the Lakers. I know Portland would like to see Grant on the Lakers if the Lakers are interested in giving up two picks.
There are some important parties missing from this equation.
I have not ever, not once, heard that the Lakers are interested in giving up two picks for Jeremy Grant.
You think?
Not once. And like, that's where again, objectively speaking, that's the right decision. It's frustrating because I would like to see Jeremy Grant on the Lakers. I think there's still something to him as a player. But I'm not using two first rounders on a player who I'm saying I think about.
And you're done, by the way, after that. If you spend those two first rounders, any trade you have to make after that to get better, you have to do with the players you already have on your roster. And so you're not getting a big time difference maker without picks. Right. Yeah. And so that, like, you're done once you spend that. So you have to be careful in terms of where you spend those picks.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the aggregation of what I reported last night. But one thing I was told, here it is. This is from a scout that I spoke to in Vegas. Quote, Joe Cronin asking for two first rounders for Jeremy Grant is hilarious. Portland traded one first for him and then gave him that terrible contract. Why would he be more valuable now than 2 years ago when they gave up one first rounder for him? And like, this gets back to what I was talking about like the perception of the Lakers, is that like, Joe thinks that there's an opportunity here to take advantage of the situation and get everything that they can from the Lakers here on this. The part of that where, like, I wish people would there's a whole other sentence to that thing. It's like, aggregators, like, you just hit copy and paste. That's all we're told. That's all you need to do is hit copy and paste. So like, Joe sees an opportunity there, but there isn't an opportunity there, because the one thing that I think some Lakers fans are kind of frustrated by is that like, there isn't a fire underneath Rob's ass. But the good news to the fact that there isn't a fire under his ass is that like, he doesn't have to make a desperation move to save his job. He doesn't feel the need to make a desperation move to save his job. And trading two first rounders for Jeremy Grant would be a desperation move. Like, that's exactly what that would be.
I would argue that this is a smaller version of the 22 offseason, right? Where it was like, Lakers have to trade Russell Westbrook, right? There's no way they can keep him. That was the thought at the time. And as a result, I was like, yeah, Lakers are going to have to trade. Like, what was the rumor at the deadline that year? Russ for John Wall in a first before that offseason? Come on.
John's not even in the league anymore. Yeah.
If you go back and like look at old trade rumors regarding the Lakers, they're actually very funny because it's always in the same insane direction. And so like, you can have that perception that the Lakers, but if the Lakers weren't desperate to trade Russell Westbrook in the summer of 2022, evaluating that, no, we're actually going to get a better deal if we wait and do it at the deadline, and they were absolutely correct in that evaluation, that then they're not going to be in that desperate situation now, right? And so, yeah, like, there can be that, oh yeah, Danny Ainge wants two first round picks for Walker Kessler, right, type of thing. Like, that's nice. It's the summer. Let's, you know, everyone's record is 0-0. We can all dream a little bit. So
Walker Kessler hasn't missed a shot this year.
That's right. And so, and I like Walker Kessler. I think he is worth a first, but anyway, yeah, like this is the time where you throw those kind of that bait out and be like, yeah, you know, I'll trade Lauri Markkanen for this. And then tomorrow I want to sign him to a 4-year extension. It's all bull crap.
Yeah. It is funny. Like, to your point, it's funny now because, you know, with the Lauri situation, now we're getting reports on what the Warriors weren't willing to give up for Lauri now that Lauri is off of the board, right? And they weren't willing to give up Pods, and they weren't willing to give up Kuminga, although I had heard more that, like, Utah was not interested in Kuminga because you have to pay Kuminga. But, like, absolutely not giving up Brandon Pajemski for Lauri Markkanen. And it's like, I had the had that version of the Lakers, like had that version of that happen with the Lakers, where the Lakers were like absolutely not giving up Austin Reeves, or I would say Reeves. Reeves is like the closest kind of comparison to Pods. We found out that the Lakers absolutely weren't giving up Reeves for Lauri, there'd be all kinds of people dunking on the Lakers for not wanting to give up Reeves for Lauri. Just like there were all kinds of people dunking on the Lakers for not wanting to give up Reeves for DeJounte Murray. But the thing is, like, under this CBA, and this is something that Rob has said that I think is worth repeating. When you have cost-controlled talent that impacts winning, that is a hell of a lot more valuable under this CBA than in prior years. In prior years, it was a lot easier to part with the Brandon Pajemskis of the world for Lauri Markkanen. But the thing with Lauri is that, like, we haven't even seen what the contract he's going to sign is. They're talking about potentially as high as like 5 years, $250 million. Under this new CBA, I don't know if I want Lauri on my books for $50 million. And that's where, like, that's where this whole offseason and the trade market in general has been really fascinating to watch, because if I'm a GM, I don't know if I want Lauri at $50 million. If I'm a GM, I don't know if I want Brandon Ingram on a max contract. We just saw the Clippers say with Paul George, we don't want Paul George on the full max that he was going to get. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see here over the next few years how teams kind of almost avoid players that are perceived that are actually good. Lauri's an actually good NBA player, but they almost avoid those guys who were like near max guys, because they're still going to expect max contracts, even though they aren't max contract players.
This is, I think, in some ways overdue. This has always been a thing, Anthony, since the institution of the max contract in the 1999 CBA, where there's a certain class of guys where it's like, obviously that guy's a max guy, but there's always the number of guys who actually get the contract, it's almost twice that number. And in some ways, that's the worst place to be, or the worst kind of guy to have, is a guy who is very good, but is going to demand that max contract under the current rules, but is not in that upper type of tier. And I think that the wise teams typically do avoid paying those type of guys. But we've got all these guys around the league that are in that class now, in that Lauri Markkanen, Brandon Ingram, Zach LaVine, right? I think the fact that they can't find a market for LaVine is super interesting. That, yeah, it sort of speaks to your point and about what this new CBA is. I would also say, though, that historically speaking, one of the ways the Lakers have kind of worked the system has been learning the new rules, the new CBA, and mastering it at the time. So way back in the 70s, they're like, yeah, we'll let Gail Goodrich walk. That means you've got to give us your first round pick, Utah, and you're not very good. We don't think that 30-something-year-old Gail Goodrich is going to be the guy that puts you over the top. So, yeah, give us a future first in a couple of years. Oh, crap, we got Magic Johnson out of that. Ted Stepien, the namesake of the Stepien rule. You want to trade all your future first because you want a decent player? Fine, here's a couple of bench guys. Oh, we got James Worthy after we win the championship with the number one overall pick. And so that's part of the job of this front office, is to be like, oh, there's this new CBA. It can't just be like, oh, it's really hard, it's really difficult to navigate. That's part of the
next step,
part of the
navigate
fun. Navigate it and navigate it better than anybody. That's how you win.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've talked about this a little bit in the past, but originally the setup when Magic was still around was, at least theoretically, it was going to be Magic would handle the macro stuff and Rob would be able to focus on the minutia. And he would make sure that nothing would fall through the cracks while Magic was still there, because Rob was going to be there to seal up all of those cracks. And one of the things that I think is a legitimate criticism of Genie's time as majority owner has been not like you elevated Rob, but you didn't replace the ceiling, the cracks guy. You know, you didn't replace when Rob gets promoted. You don't then hire somebody to work with him to make sure that you can stay ahead of a CBA and you can have somebody focused on those minutia type of deals that help you with some of these things so that you could get out ahead, like you just talked about with those prior examples. And that's the thing that like I was hoping that they would address this year is, you know, whether it's, I think right now Jesse Buss is the assistant GM, but they don't have, like, Rob holds both positions, vice president of basketball operations and general manager. I was hoping that the Lakers would hire a general manager this year to help with some of those crack things. And I think, like, an example of things kind of potentially slipping through the crack is giving those player options and then now paying for them by way of not being able to move them at the deadline. I'm not saying that they definitely didn't know that clause was coming or anything like that, but it did still put them in a tough spot with those things.
Yeah, I think that just across the board, this is something that became more apparent to me from working there, was they just need more people in a lot of aspects of the organization. Like, you compare the Lakers social media team to the staffing of the Warriors social media team, and it's night and day. And that's just true in a lot of departments across the team. And it's the Lakers are this very odd mix of like global brand and mom and pop shop, and that there are several people who have actually kind of humorous, like, wait, you do that, but you also do that. And it's sort of like, you know, when you don't have enough, a ton of bodies, you just pick up odd jobs. Like, somebody's got to do the job. And so there are several people in different departments that like kind of have this weird mishmash of responsibilities.
Harrison and I used to joke that Gary Vitti was team trainer and air traffic controller.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you get off the plane, wave him in, tape up some ankles on the way out.
Yeah.
That's still kind of part of it. And so, on the basketball side, I think you make a good point about Magic being the guy that was the big picture guy and Rob being the guy who was supposed to take care of all of the details. And they've elevated the guy who was supposed to take care of all of the details and not replaced that other guy. And so what that looks like, who it should be, that's all open conversation. But I do think now I think there are reasons for it, but I do think that just like hiring more people across the board, across the Lakers, is something that I would love to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to spend a little bit more time on the trade market and how the Lakers kind of manage it, because like you made the point earlier that I think is a really, really good one that I hope people take note of, in that a lot of times, and look, you're talking to somebody who is doing more reporting now than the last time you and I were doing podcasts and stuff like that. And one of the things that I really try to delineate in my reporting is who, what is coming from, without giving away sourcing, because for obvious reasons. But I do try to say, like, league sources are saying this. People closer to the Lakers are saying this, right? Mm-hmm. An example of that was the Spencer Dinwiddie thing, where I was told right away when somewhat miraculously he was just waived by the Toronto Raptors, I was told right away by the people close to the Lakers that I was talking to, we're interested in him. We have confidence that we're going to get him. And then over the course of the next couple days there, it was interesting because the people that I was talking to around the league thought he was going to Dallas. And the people that I was talking to close to the Lakers were like, no, actually, I think we got him. Like, I think that Rob had a good talk with him. I think we're going to get him. And I said, like, I sent out a tweet and I said, sourcing close to the Lakers think that they're getting him. Sourcing close to, you know, around the league, more kind of zoomed out, think that he's going to Dallas. Remember, he went to the Mavericks game when they played the Knicks that one day. And the reason I say all of that is because with this Grant thing, right? People that you talk to around the league, Zach Lowe even joked on his show, when are we going to start printing up the Jeremy Grant Lakers uniforms, right? Because people around the league are like, this makes sense. It's a clutch guy. He doesn't make sense for Portland's timeline. The Lakers have a need there. And so from like a zoomed out perspective, people around the league are like, yeah, like this makes sense. Like we can connect dots here. Clutch also, like I said earlier, wants him there. Portland wants to move him. They want to move him and Anfernee Simons before camp kicks off because there just isn't the spot on their timeline for those two guys. And again, and this is also a function, like you said, that there's a potential reason for why things are the way that they are with the Lakers. I think the Lakers are hyper-focused on the amount of information that trickles out of the organization right now. And it can be good. It can be bad, I think. But nobody I have spoken to thinks that Jeremy Grant is like that high a priority to him. Actually, the person that I've thought that the Lakers thought they were more confident about was Kuz over the course of the offseason, because Washington was at least open to negotiation. Portland hasn't been. And yet again, like it's just like when we talk about what the Lakers are thinking about doing, I think one of the major factors in fans getting their hopes up the way that they typically do is because a lot of people like me link them to names by way of connecting dots. And very, very few people actually have sourcing within the Lakers organization who would say, yeah, we're interested in that player. Wendell Carter Jr., I think, is an even better example of this, where there were internal conversations, I was told, about Wendell. And the thing did get a little bit closer negotiations did get a little bit closer with Wendell than they have ever gotten in Jeremy. But again, the Lakers didn't want to give up two picks for somebody who would essentially be potentially a backup center. And
wait, the rumor was that we were going to give two picks for Wendell Carter?
No. It never was that the Lakers were going to give up two picks for him. The rumor was that the Lakers had serious negotiations with Orlando, but didn't want to give up two firsts for him. They wanted to give up one. Orlando wanted two. Again, it all comes down to, and I said this on the show the other day when I was asked about it, the Lakers see their management of information as a strength. I think it insulates them from potential intel from around the league, but it does, like, that smaller team means that there are fewer people that are going to talk to other people around. And the reason I'm saying all of this is because, like, when we see these rumors about the Lakers are attached to X player, it's because of the information industry more so than it is actual interest in that player.
Correct.
So I'm curious, however much information you want to give on this, but like for you as somebody who was juggling working for the Lakers and creating content, when you were hearing about all of these names, or even more importantly, kind of talking with your audience about things that the Lakers are potentially getting ready to do, how did you balance what you knew about stuff versus the narrative and perception out there about what the Lakers were thinking about doing or what they didn't wind up doing at various transaction windows?
That's a very perceptive observation from you, that it was a weird intersection to be at for me, meaning that there were certain, there were certain things where it was like, I know this element to be true. And part of it's fun, right? It's sort of an investigation of like piecing things together. Even if I never report it or tell somebody else, just a certain like, oh, this person thinks this about that. And interesting, right? It's just, you get more access to information. And so one thing I grew an appreciation for was that information economy that you were talking about, and that just like, there's a time for content. And so we're going to talk about Jeremy Grant for a month because it's August, right? We did last year with Christian Wood. It was a different thing, but it was like the thing to talk about. He didn't sign for 2 or 3 weeks. And it was, we debated Christian Wood for, you know, part of the year. And so, that's just kind of part of what it is. It's also, I think part of why Pelinka has the trust of Genie is that he's very close to the vest and he doesn't engage in this stuff much at all. And so that I think is very much, like you said, it's important to the Lakers to play things close to the vest. And And so in terms of managing that from a content creation standpoint, I tried to steer toward what I thought was more true where I would, but there were also several things where I just kind of had to let it pass by. And if I weren't working for the team, I would be like, actually, I think, you know, we should consider this element of it, where sometimes discretion was a better way of going about it. So yeah, strange spot to be in.
What do you think about like what comes next with this trade market? Because it was fascinating to hear over the course of the summer. Now, I think it was kind of overplayed, but Zach LaVine is such an interesting character because he is a, when he has his head on right, he's a good NBA player, I think. He has a really interesting skill set, especially offensively. Like if you were to put Zach LaVine on an Anthony Davis team and allow AD to kind of make up for the defensive deficiencies that LaVine brings to the table, but you also now have one of the greatest, like the not greatest, but best downhill creators in the sport, who now is just going to completely collapse defenses, and you allow AD to just kind of like completely handle the broken defenses that are left behind, especially when like you have LeBron also doing some of that stuff too. Like it's a fascinating idea there. The problem though is that like his contract is so brutal. This CBA makes it so that those contracts are specifically brutal because like we're just going to stop seeing them. We just like Zach LaVine, I think, is going to make like 50, we'll say for the sake of ease, 50 something million bucks, you know, a year. That kind of contract is, I think, going to dwindle down to like 30 million bucks a year, is what like the Zach LaVines of the world are going to be making here moving forward. They're going to be pissed that they're going to be making that moving forward, which is crazy to think that there's going to be somebody angry that they're only making $30 million a year. But like at one point I was hearing, or there were, I didn't hear this as much, but there were rumors out there that like the Bulls might attach a first to get off of Zach LaVine. And it was, for one thing, it was like how the turns have tabled from like our side of the conversation there. And then I came to find out that it was more that like, if they were going to move LaVine in a first, they would want like actual stuff back. It wasn't just to get off of his contract, which makes sense. But still, like, he's still on the trade block. They still would prefer to trade him. Eventually they're going to have to consider moving him and moving stuff to move him. What are your thoughts on the LaVine situation?
Yeah, it speaks to a level of risk assessment from around the league that when he was first put on the market, I remember it was like, oh yeah, Austin and Rui and two firsts. And like, okay. And after a while, it's like, oh no, that's not how it's going to work with those guys at all. Even the rumors of Trey and his trade market, right? Like not being all that warm. And I think that it's way more about the contract than anything. And to me, LaVine is a guy that is not very good on defense and doesn't play a lot. He misses a lot of time with injury, that if you're making north of $40 million, I think there are a lot of people that are like, I don't really want that kind of guy. I'm actually very intrigued with him for the Lakers, but again, not really digging into the numbers, where if you did, you might be like, oh yeah, that you can't field a good team if you have Zach LaVine and AD and LeBron and paying them all the what you're paying them. That might be the case. But I think that there are a couple of things that we need. It's when D'Lo is playing well, in a lot of ways, he's exactly what we need, is a guy who can score on the ball, off of it, can pass a little, but very good shot creator, you know, and able to score and pass. But his floor is so low that I think that's a great argument for LaVine and that, or that type of guard, in that LaVine is never going to be athletically overwhelmed in the way that D'Lo can be by a taller or more athletic defender when the intensity turns up in the playoffs. LaVine can meet that guy and exceed him easily with his athletic ability. And so, like, I think there are going to be very few games, even in the playoffs, where Zach LaVine scores fewer than 10 points. And that's really valuable on a LeBron and AD team. Do we beat Denver if one of D'Lo or Rui averages in double figures that series, which they're totally capable of doing? We would have had a much better chance. And so
KCP thought so.
Yeah. Right. Like, no, we had them. They were right there for us. And just our two of our guys who had been really dependable offensively throughout the year disappeared in that series in a lot of ways. And so to me, LaVine represents an offensive floor that's higher than either guy like that. That's very appealing, especially at the guard position, especially since if we're really high on Austin, and I really like Austin, but I think you need an athlete next to him. I would want that athlete to play defense, and LaVine doesn't check that box, right? So,
so
I get
that KCP was like the perfect Austin backcourt mate. Like, it's like it hurt physically to watch KCP play basketball because I'm like, he's exactly what I would want next to. Now, I think some of that about Bruce Brown too, but like KCP was like the Nuggets KCP over the last couple of years. If you had him next to Austin, man.
I don't know if we have enough shot creation. That's one thing about D'Lo, about prospective D'Lo trades, is that I think that guy we get back has to have some level of juice on the ball, or else like we're really losing something.
It's why I would have preferred to make a D'Lo trade earlier in the offseason. Now, there was no way to know that Tyus Jones would eventually go for the minimum, or Gary Trent Jr. would eventually go for the minimum. And I do think there's something to what I had heard about like the Lakers not wanting to promise roles with JJ being a first time coach. Like I actually think that there's something there that makes a little bit of sense.
Oh, me too.
I would show a little flexibility for the opportunities that the Lakers could have potentially had. Like Gary Trent Jr. on the minimum or Tyus Jones on the minimum is just unfathomable. It is great,
but we didn't have the role. Remember, those type of guys, they're going to not want to sign a vet minimum contract again next year. So the best thing you can offer them once they're at that point where they're not getting that $25 million a year that Gary Trent was dreaming about is like, yo, let me play 30 minutes a game and start for you and be good on a good team. Whereas on the Lakers, like their starters are D'Lo and Austin, right? They could theoretically compete for it, but they don't have anything guaranteed playing time if they sign here.
That's more what I mean is that like I would have preferred to have seen a D'Lo trade earlier in the offseason so that if now again this is all hindsight being 2020, but if you move D'Lo earlier in the offseason and then you know you now have a wing filling that spot, whether it's Kuz or Grant or if you turn D'Lo into Wendell Carter Jr. or something like that. Now you do have potentially a starting spot to be able to offer a Gary Trent Jr. or a Tyus Jones. I'm just not really willing to crush the Lakers for not doing that because there was no way to know that those guys were going to be available at the minimum. Like it's hard to plan your offseason around, maybe Gary Trent Jr. will be available at the minimum and make a move earlier in the summer that would have required hoping that a Gary Trent Jr. or a player of his ilk would be available at the minimum. I think that goes back to what you were talking about though, like about what the Lakers in years past were able to do where maybe they do have a little bit of for lack of a better term, foresight into what an offseason might look like because of this CBA. Like some of this stuff was actually able to be like, I could actually predict some of how this was going to go because this CBA was legitimately crushing to a lot of people around the league.
Very much so. And that's part of the reason why I think Max and Connect are very important figures within this, to the point that you were saying that Pelinka made about how having cost-controlled talent is super important. I really like Connect. And I think that he's going to be a double-figure scorer from pretty early on in his career. And so he's like 4 years, $18 million. Max, if he hits, he's on at 4 and 32. All of a sudden, you've got some things to kind of build off of. And that's also part of the reason why waiting till the deadline, if either of those guys hit, you have a better idea of kind of where you're at. And you might be able to move another guy or either of them if the right player pops up to be able to get that guy you're looking for.
Yeah, I like Connect. I wish I saw more from him defensively. Like his instincts are pretty poor defensively, but like offensively, good God, that guy has as complete an offensive package as you're going to see from a rookie, period. I know that sounds hyperbolic, but I think he has like everything that you would want a modern shooting guard to have. Let's wrap on this then, Pete. What comes next? Like what would you be looking for next here from the Lakers? I think this is the roster. Like I keep getting told that this is likely the roster, unless there's some, unless Portland comes off of their stance with Jeremy, or unless Washington comes off of their stance with Kuz or whatever, unless there's some sized difference in the market than it is right now. this appears to be the roster next year. So like what, even if it isn't a matter of like what you're hoping to see next, what would you expect from this roster next season? What do you think is fair to expect from these guys?
Yeah, I think that you're right that this is basically going to be what the team is. I've thought that since the Clay stuff didn't work out, that this was probably where we were going to be. And I think that we would like to get a five, a defensive five at some level. Now that could be a, that could be all the way down to the G League team, right? Or a two-way guy or competition, right? Down there. So we'll see if we bring a guy in that respect. But I do know that that's on the team's radar, is just that five spot and kind of shoring it up as best we can. And then it's really about implementation of Redick's system at this point. It's not the sexiest thing. It's not even a roster thing, but it's more like we are, they're trying to build infrastructure, of which I think the conversation that we've had about how onerous the CBA is informs this, of like, oh crap, if it's harder to make external moves, you should have this anyway, but it's extra important that your player development is good now, that we can grow guys internally. And we've got all these young players now where it's, can we develop Dalton Connect defensively so that if he can get just a certain baseline on defense, he's enough of a scorer that can really help us? Can we develop Max as a decision maker and a passer? Can we do all of this? And so developing that and kind of what Redick's vision is for the team, for the basketball, and building out kind of the player development, I think is what to look forward to next. Then from a roster perspective, it's about learning who fits and who doesn't over the first few months. And then you got the trade window between December 15th or so through the deadline in early to mid February. And that to me is where the Lakers will are likeliest to make a move. But it also depends on how we're doing. If we're lingering at the ninth spot again, well below the play-in and all that, Anthony, I do think there's going to be some pushback internally of like, are we really going to trade a future first just so we could lose in the second round of the playoffs? Like, that's one thing to keep in mind, is that I think that they will want, if they're going to make a move, they're going to want to be able to look at the team and be like, hey, we can be in the mix for a title. And if that's not available, they might not.
I think it all hinges on, like, that part of it hinges on what LeBron looks like and what Anthony Davis look like. Because they have shown, if you give them even a somewhat logical team in the postseason, they're going to do stuff. So it's kind of hard to evaluate based off of where they currently stand, you know, or sit in the standings at any given point in the year. Like, if AD looks like, I mean, obviously he's not going to look the way he has looked for the Lakers, like he has looked on Team USA or whatever. But I think you can make a real argument that last season from start to finish was like top 3 years in AD's career.
It was incredible.
You know, LeBron is doing stuff at his age that we may literally never see ever again. Like, I started this like season re-preview series, and I was doing LeBron's. I kicked it off with LeBron's, and I started it by saying how like I was having a conversation with my dad, and I was telling him like, oh, I'm pretty sure LeBron averaged like, you know, 25, 7, and 8. He's like, oh, come on, he didn't do that. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure he did over like, you know, 65 plus games. He's like, get the fuck out of here. He didn't. And he did. He did do that. He was. And so, like, I think I'm always going to be of the opinion, both as a Lakers fan and as an NBA fan, that if you have two guys that are at that level, you keep pushing the chips in and you deal with the back end of it when you have to deal with it.
Totally agree. I just think that the Lakers are operating with a limited number of chips. And so the all in hand, you got to make sure that you got the cards to be able to play, right? And so, so don't do that for Jeremy Grant. And but I do think that Laker fans are right to want and expect a move and feel like, hey, you got to really go for it when you have the opportunity. I think a year like the Clippers had last year in the regular season, where they were like a 4 or 5 seed for most of the season, is totally within the Lakers' reach. And so I just think it's not so much about like LeBron and AD have to prove themselves. Now, if they're hurt, right, that's obviously a whole nother deal. But it's more about like it's more about, are you, have you shown that you're a competent team that's on the road to where you need to go? There are also going to be injuries and a level of attrition where there will be some circumstance at that point of the season that we're not foreseeing right now,
yeah,
that will have to be reacted to, that will be more aligned with actually winning the championship of that team, right? So right now, Anthony, it's just about building the system that Anthony or that that Reddick wants to run, and just getting guys familiarized and seeing who fits and who doesn't.
Yeah, I'm mostly with you there. You know, and it makes it tough too, because like, we don't know what that system is. There's no way to know. Like, we can guess based off of what he said on podcasts or whatever, but like, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what that looks like. But Pete, this has been an absolute blast. You know, I was thrilled when you said that you could do this week, and looking forward to hopefully doing more of these things here, moving forward. But as you guys know, if you guys are listening to this show, you undoubtedly follow Pete on Twitter and you follow him on YouTube. I do want to send anybody who doesn't Pete's direction, because he does incredible work, and I really respect the things that he has built over his time in this industry as well. Anything specific that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
Just excited. I got a Jerry West video coming up, how Jerry West saved the Lakers in the 90s, that I'm excited about. Kind of a new style of video that, kind of long. It's 13, 14 minutes that I'm hoping to wrap up tonight, but should be posted by the end of the week. You can find it at my YouTube. I'll also be calling games on Playback. I'll be at noon today. I'll be calling the USA Brazil game, little throwback game. So doing stuff on Playback this year. So you can find me there.
Absolutely. Great stuff. I thought for a second you were going to do like a Jerry West basketball player video, and that would be fascinating. Like, I would like to see what you throw together. Like, that's something that I think we are really kind of lacking, is a look back at, like, an actual look back. Like, we get highlights. We have a ton of highlights on guys, you know. But, like, actually explaining, like, why Elgin Baylor has a statue. Why, you know, why Jerry West is the logo and stuff like that would be fascinating. But, no, you add to the greatness that he had on the basketball court, to, like, everything he did as an executive, and you can make a real argument that he is, like, top three most important figures in basketball.
You could make an argument.
History.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I thought you were going to say in terms of the Lakers, you could make an argument that he's the most important Laker, like a fairly convincing.
I make that argument all the time.
He's mine, for sure.
Like, I think, you know, Kobe comes second. Magic, I think, you can't really specifically say Magic and put him over West, because West brought Magic in, you know, or helped bring Magic in. Can't quite say Kobe over West, because again, West brought Kobe in. So it's like it's actually insane. All of the through lines that start at Jerry West.
That's right.
In Lakers history. And rest in peace, man. All right. No, that's going to do it here. We are going to be back on Friday with a Austin Reeves season re-preview thing. And then obviously it's a lounge episode, so we will have your input there as well. And Pete, thanks again for hopping on. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you on Friday.
Bye, everyone.